I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Call me anything you want, baby. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Arsenal broke Luton's hearts and Wolves won. It's Wednesday, 6th of December. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Vidushin Hantharaja.
Welcome one and all. It's midweek. We've made it thus far and it's good to have you with us. Thanks to friend of the Ramble, Joey Lacourte, for sending us today's intro line. You can become a friend of the Ramble too by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble.
That's a great name, by the way.
It is. Mm. I went for Lacourte rather than Lacourte or Lacourte. Because I don't think that's how it's pronounced, Andy. Joey, we love you and your name. And sorry for the disrespect. Jim Campbell, Arsenal disrespected Luton last night, didn't they? Going there and winning 4-3 with a last gasp winner from that man, Declan Rice.
It's not quite how I'd word it, but I suppose there was some disrespect.
You basically went into someone's set of houses.
Yep.
And ruined their evening.
Ruined their evening. Yeah, absolutely.
It's so annoying.
And I would do it again.
it's one of those ones where it's going to be a famous night. All Luton fans are going to remember. You do not. Take it from a Fulham fan the other day at Anfield, you know. Oh, what a game. I'd rather lost 1-0.
Yeah, there was a lot of that in the
rather
commentary.
Rather lost 2-0.
And I suppose what that comes from really is how those players can go, look at what we are capable of in spells, and we shouldn't really fear anyone if we can take the game to Arsenal like this. I think it was a really weird game because obviously David Raya has made two clangers there, which on another day probably doesn't make. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not quite as raucous. But actually, they are a pain in the arse, aren't they, Luton? They are absolutely hard work. I don't think I can recall wanting a team to stay up as much as I want Luton to stay up. Just the way they play.
Really?
And because it's the romance of it. You know, that's such a tiny stadium. Mm-hmm. They are delighted to be there in a way that isn't, you know, sometimes it's a bit competition winner when a team sort of really feel like they're going to go down. Yep. You don't get that from Luton. There's a sense that, like, we're here on merit and we're going to make life difficult for absolutely everybody. And they did that yesterday. The start of the game, Arsenal had so much of the ball. But after about 15, 20 minutes, Luton really came into it. And there was a sense that they were confident. They were like, you know what, we can have the ball and we can take this to them. We can make it uncomfortable. Rob Edwards said that, you know, the Arsenal's game is about control. So let's try and make it difficult. Let's try and like ruffle them and
chaotic
get
was the word
you chaotic, absolutely. And it worked. It worked for large periods. And, you know, obviously Arsenal have got very good at late winners. Mm-hmm. Declan Rice has got that sort of physicality that they've perhaps lacked in years gone by. And it's really satisfying that they're capable of scoring, not just, you know, at that time, but goals like that.
Yeah.
And it was what a belter of a game.
It was a great game. In the spirit of when we talk about England, don't worry, everybody, I'm not going to derail it just yet. We'll get to Barkley in a
just
bit.
Yet. Just yet.
And not just that, we'll get to Barkley in a bit. See where this is going.
Not even 4 minutes on the clock, just yet.
You forgot about the adverts at the start. Whenever we say, oh, such and such should be the English, or he should be starting for England, it's kind of like, if you can't fit them on, who are you taking it? So you said you want Luton to stay up. Who do you want to be condemned to the Championship instead of them?
Spurs.
Right.
It's a good answer.
Yeah, it's not the answer I was hoping for.
Did you see in the post-match interviews as well on Amazon, a lovely moment of Bukayo Saka looking at Declan Rice in the way in which we all look at Bukayo Saka.
Yes, that was nice. Well, Bukayo Saka, of course, the fourth youngest Arsenal player to reach 200 appearances for the club.
You can hear those hamstrings. You can hear them.
Yeah,
he'll have been aiming for that since his debut.
But it is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And he's become so kind of ubiquitous, you almost forget how young he is.
Well, that's right.
How much he's achieved.
An incredible player.
And because there are so many incredible aspects to his game,
yeah,
the stamina thing is not the one you first think of.
No.
So it is actually frightening when you see how many miles like him and Jude Bellingham have got on the clock at their age already. Yeah. Let's not think about that for the moment.
Yeah.
I would rather not. But the fact that they're able to do that like so relentlessly is amazing. But what you were talking about, actually, his role in the third goal, that the Havertz goal, I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah.
Because you were talking about Arsenal finding a different way to win the game and Declan Rice giving them a different way to win the game. I think that's the same with the equalising goal. I mean, it's a very well taken goal, but it's actually quite route one-ish, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And I think that Arsenal can find a different way to do that in an unpromising situation. Because like, when the Rice goal came, it wasn't like the crescendo of a load of pressure.
No.
Like, they were trying for a winner, but it didn't really look like it was coming, did it?
No, because it was essentially at that point in the game, it got to the point where it was just backs against the wall defending, try and pick a way through, which is really, really difficult to do. So it was just about maintaining that sort of aerial bombardment. And the aerial game has got a lot stronger. I mean, this game is a perfect kind of example of that. Three of those goals were you know, from kind of aerial play, essentially. And it's not just about slick interplay now. Those two styles can coexist, obviously. Some of the goals were examples of that as well. But I think that's one of the really interesting things about the way Arteta is evolving Arsenal a little bit, that it isn't just, you know, trying to walk the ball into the net, to sort of use a cliche from the past. It is this element of the game has to be stronger as well, because every style of goal counts, and you've got to use every margin available to you.
It's what City did, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Got better at counter-attacking.
You're sounding a bit like Sam Allardyce.
Yeah?
We'll get you a pint of wine in just a moment.
Do.
But no, you're right. I mean, some of the pundits have been saying about Arsenal, and a lot of people have been saying it as well, that they are playing in a little bit more of a sort of rugged and let's get the job done kind of way, if you like, this season, which is boding well. You know, a lot of last minute winners, you know, they've scored 5 stoppage time goals this season, which have earned them 9 points from those goals after 90 minutes, which shows. And Declan Rice, it's his 2nd stoppage time winner of the season. You know, he's a huge player for Arsenal already. Mikel Arteta, you mentioned him, said after the match, "I really enjoyed it, especially at the end."
He got booked at the end, though, so I missed the Villa game.
He was booked for his celebrations for that goal. And you're right, Jim, he's now banned for the touchline for the match at Villa Park on Saturday. It's his 4th yellow card of the season, which results in a 1-match touchline ban. Vish, should Arsenal be celebrating winners against Luton?
Do something about this man.
No, they shouldn't.
Should they enjoy football until they've won a trophy?
No one should.
No, exactly.
Well, no, everyone else should. Everyone else is allowed to. They shouldn't.
That's
really
right. But a word on Luton, though. They were very, very good. And they, you know, they did make it chaotic. They did take the game to Arsenal. They gave them a hell of a game and were very unlucky not to get a result, of course.
They did. But I suppose, you know, it's important if, you know, if someone's listening who didn't watch the match, it wasn't like a chaos equivalent of like throwing a Mento into a Diet Coke bottle.
Now you're talking.
There was a bit of structure to what they were trying to do.
Is that what Rob Edwards should do on the sideline? If it's a bit too placid, he should go, lads, lads, and he drops it in and goes, poof,
yeah.
And they go, right, there's
something different every time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. Smoke
lighter,
signals out.
A lighter and some deodorant.
Not a man of flamethrower!
Yeah, like those YouTube channels, which is just like dropping things onto other things
from
great height. Yeah.
Is that magnesium ribbon he's got?
He's got a trampoline.
That's a whistly pop. That's sodium, that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think, like, you know, you were going to mention, you did mention Ross Barkley at the start. Oh. I think someone like him in that situation is almost like, you know, he turned 30 yesterday, which is wild, by the way.
Yeah.
But you kind of assume maturity on someone with age. And I think it's probably just opportunity for him. He's got a chance here to, you know, actually be the technical guy in the middle. And I thought he did that really well.
He was great.
He was man of the match.
Yeah, was he?
On Sky Sports, he was given, on their review and all, he was given man of the match. I know the game wasn't on Sky Sports.
Yeah, right.
But so somebody out there thought it.
Yeah, fair enough. I wouldn't have done that, but fair enough. His goal when he breaks away from Odegaard, and, you know, Odegaard's on the floor, he breaks between two Arsenal players. I can't remember who the other one was. But I thought that was a great example of someone who knows what the next tier of on-field quality has to be. Like, it's one thing, you know, passing the ball about, you know, getting to positions, crossing the ball being physical. But there's sensing that opportunity to, right, I can break a line here and carry the ball forward.
Yeah.
Almost a bit rugby-like in that way. And not a lot of midfielders do it. And I thought the fact that he did it, you know, and surrounded by someone like Kabore on the right side, who is always, like, very engaging and, like, very forward-thinking, and you got players like Adebayo and Ogbeni when they come on, and they actually really make a difference. And I think Edwards has done really well in identifying those players and when to unleash them as well.
Yeah.
Because I genuinely thought from the start of the game that they were kind of out of it. I was like, oh, Arsenal are just going to win this with their quality. Mm. And in the end, they didn't. Arsenal basically had to win it with, not Route 1 or agricultural, but something that was, you know, certainly less on the floor than they'd have liked.
Yeah.
And you talked about the man of the match. I mean, the man of the match on Amazon was Gabriel Osho. Of course.
Yeah, right.
I mean, Arsenal have got three Gabriels and not one of them won man of the match.
Yeah, well, Andy, it's an important point to make. But saying about Barkley, you know, some of the Luton players who have played in lower divisions in the country and whatnot are looking at a guy who has played for Chelsea. You know, obviously it was a bit patchy, didn't often start for Chelsea and whatnot, but he was still there for a few years. He has a few, he won a few trophies in his time, played in a Europa League final, you know, so you are looking for a player like that to do something. And when he does, that gives the team such a lift because you think, bloody hell, there's the guy. Right, okay, let's all sort of muck in. And sort of, obviously Townsend's there as well, another one with sort of bigger experience.
But Barkley also has to earn their trust, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
because let's be honest, all being well, Barkley probably wouldn't be playing for Luton.
I think part of the issue Barkley's had in his career, isn't it, has not been trusted to be senior, almost. and as you say, he has to sort of prove himself to them in a way now, but he has no choice but to lead, but to sort of take things by the scruff of the neck, really, take control and set that example. And he's based on this performance, he's thriving.
Well,
it's great.
Really, our football career is about making the right decisions as well. And he got lost in the crowd at Chelsea before it was fashionable to get lost in the crowd at Chelsea. I mean, it's much easier these days, I suppose.
Yeah.
But like, if you look at that, I mean, I think of when he went and signed for Nice, for example, which you might think is a nice opportunity. He arrived on the pitch at halftime. They presented him on the pitch at halftime. He looked quite dishevelled. Basically, they'd just given him a knee shirt to put on top of his jeans, and he was like waving at the crowd. And they asked
on his legs.
Yeah, it's one of the big ones. You know those fashionable t-shirts, Jim, that go low. Like,
and they like asked Lucien Favre, the coach, about him, and he's like, "I've no idea where he plays." You know,
was that a case of, though, that I have no idea, as in he can play a number of positions? I don't know what his best position. I'm trying to give Favre a bit of the...
Bless you, Marcus.
That's not what he meant. He meant, you've just given me this random English player and I don't want him.
Did he do a wanker song?
That's
when
what he was.
Yeah.
probably below. You can only see the head and shoulders. But I think that felt to me like a low point, in that, you know, he's someone who should be having a new opportunity here. There's never been any doubt about his ability. And he's just being like coated off by a coach who doesn't want him. Mm. Whereas now he's got an opportunity to do something, but he's not carrying any of that baggage. If you look at the way he played in that game, you know, he played like, yeah, I belong here. And I always have belonged here. And that's fine.
Of course it is, yeah.
Can we have a moment to appreciate Martin Odegaard did a lot of very good things in that second half. Mm. The bit where he was running with the ball towards his own half as the last man and somehow shimmied the person pressing him without even looking at him.
Yeah.
He had his back turned to the bloke. But then turned knowing that he wouldn't be there.
He's an amazing, like, 360-degree footballer, Odegaard. And his feet are just magic.
Especially in a game where, you know, Luton's whole thing, as they said, was to be aggressive and be chaotic. For someone to have found, like, as much space as he does, I feel like everyone would come in, like, certainly, like, you know, the pub pundit point of view would be like, get close to him and kick him. You can't get close to him, can you?
No.
I never really see him under pressure.
Kick the ball at him, because we know he was out for a bit.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Just aim for him.
He's
get the catapult.
Yeah. He's essentially constantly assessing angles, isn't he?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So he just, I think he's mentally a very, very quick player.
Can we talk about the Raya and Ramsdale thing? Because obviously it wasn't David Raya's best night, was it?
No. You're in the pocket of Ramsdale's dad, aren't you? That's what's going on here.
Just like that ball.
We've got to do it. Yeah. Very good, Andy. Like,
is there room?
Is there, yeah. Do you want to talk about the bauble or the competition for the goalkeeper?
Let's talk about the goalkeepers first.
Okay.
What do you think this has done, Jim, to Raya's position? I mean, it was amazing seeing Arteta speaking afterwards, just totally...
Proper Pep.
Blanking the question. Oh, yeah. Unbelievable.
It was Pep and sort of John Stones, wasn't it?
The more he tries to be not like Pep, the more he is like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the situation is... I think both Raya or Ramsdale, based on their recent performances, would probably be better if the other one wasn't there. Because perhaps it's an easy conclusion to draw, but it does seem that the pressure is telling on both of them a little bit. You know, Ramsdale has mistakes in him. Sure, he had a few last season. That's probably why, you know, Raya is here to you know, improve things marginally, that sense. But they both look just sort of nervous. I was only saying at the start of the game, actually, in the last few games, he's looked a bit more comfortable. And I suppose some of it is getting to know your defenders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So everyone is now saying, well, surely after these mistakes, Ramsdale's going to get a look in. But actually, I think had Ramsdale been making these mistakes last season, it wouldn't mean he'd be dropped for Carl Hein. And I think what's actually happened is that Raya is Arteta's number one, whatever, but publicly he's saying something different just to try and manage this situation, because the opportunity came to get Raya when he didn't think he'd be able to and he wanted to pounce on it. He maybe feels he had to make this situation as it currently is. And I don't think we're going to see a change. I think Ramsdale will stay around for this season. They will probably sell him in the summer because he's a valuable asset. And I think actually it might even be better for Raya to not have... the spectre of this kind of competition behind him and just not constantly have this story.
From what you've seen of both goalkeepers as an Arsenal fan, who would you rather have in between the sticks and below another stick?
Below another stick. it's a really difficult question, that, because I don't think we've seen the best of Raya yet. But I also...
Because of the situation he's come into.
Because of the situation. Yeah. Well, possibly. It's impossible
exactly.
to know
is
that,
it,
isn't it?
Is it because of the situation? Because the fact is, I think a lot of people have looked at the raw numbers of Raya and Ramsdale and said, well, Raya is an upgrade. He's a better goalkeeper. Mm. But is he a better goalkeeper in this situation?
Well, Andy...
Because it's a totally different gig.
Because this is the situation.
Arsenal than Brentford.
Yeah, you're busy at Brentford, right?
Yeah.
Or busier. So
it's a very, very different style of goalkeeping. And also... If you look at Raya's career, I mean, he's been in England for a long time. I mean, he's got 3 caps for Spain, you know, which is impressive considering the competition and stuff.
Sorry, I know you didn't frame it like this, but it really sounds like treachery coming from you. Well, you spent a lot of time for England, but
coming from me.
Yeah. Coming from Mr. England.
Just because of
your voting records, don't worry about it.
Look, I'll talk more on this on my show on GB News later. how to set fire to your own career. No, what I was going to say is that it's interesting. You know, if he was, say, I don't know, a part of the you know, the Barcelona Academy or something like that. And Arteta goes, but I know that there's something there to unlock and so on.
Yeah.
Do you think we've seen enough from Raya to think the ceiling is very high and what Arteta really wants is a goalkeeper that will play his part in a team that will push for a title and not make mistakes and play with his feet and all the stuff? Do you think that's in Raya?
I think it's in him, sure. But I don't think we've necessarily seen it consistently enough for Arsenal yet. I think he is a better goalkeeper than Aaron Ramsdale.
Okay.
But I don't know it yet. Does that make sense?
You know,
it does make sense. Because I think it's maybe not in him.
The environmental
thing we can't know for the moment.
It's the huge issue
thing. I mean, you were saying to me...
Well, again, tune in later for the debate.
you were saying to me earlier, Vish, about the thing where Ramsdale was perceived to be laughing on the bench, that it's actually a good thing for Ramsdale when Raya makes a mistake, for example. You know, there's no getting around that. But I think maybe it's not such a good thing for him, because if I'm Ramsdale and I want to play in the Euros, I want to play, whether it's Arsenal or somewhere else in the second half of the season. Whereas if I'm Arteta and Raya's making mistakes, I'm thinking, shit, I definitely can't get rid of Ramsdale.
Well, see, this is instructive, isn't it? See, I don't think that... Ramsdale will get back in, regardless of, unless like
I agree,
unless Raya like makes like 4 or 5 utter clangers in the next game,
and that is a good thing fundamentally, because if Ramsdale thinks he's coming in or is under the impression that he might come in because Raya's made those 2 mistakes, I don't think he'd be a fan of that, because you wouldn't want to come in on those terms.
I know what you mean.
If you're thinking that it's 2 strikes and you're gone, then. Or you're back on the bench. It absolutely changes your mindset, as Jim alluded to before. There's a great quote in American football about this, in terms of, and it pertains to a starter position where you can only have one. Yeah, and it goes, when you have 2 quarterbacks, you have none. Because the level of competition is such, and the responsibility is such that you kind of lose what makes you a good quarterback in the way you might lose what makes you a good goalkeeper. That sense of bravery, that idea of just tossing risk from your mind and not thinking about what if, just dealing in positive statements and positive intent, essentially, which you might lose from thinking that you're constantly in battle with someone.
I mean, it does depend, because it's not the first time we've seen 2 good quality goalkeepers at a football club who are battling out for a position. I totally take what you're saying. And this is the thing. We all think that, healthy competition for places, that's the end of the discussion. Well, actually, no. People have different personalities.
But where have we seen it before where it's worked? Because the only other example I can think of is... when Mendy came in for Kepa, and then Mendy kind of ran with the shirt, and that seemed to be solving itself.
Well, at Chelsea.
And then there was a flip when Mendy got injured, and then Kepa was running with the shirt. Mendy, and I suppose both of them,
Kudacini being on the bench. People rated Kudacini, and then Cech came in.
Marcus, I think, to go back to your statement, I don't think it is healthy competition. That's the
exactly.
And that's what I mean. I think that's often you think, well, there's the template. That's the thing. Boom. That's the end of discussion. But as you say, every club and it depends on the situation. Depends on the people involved.
And it's goalkeepers. There can only be one. Because you look at, say, Barcelona. If you go back to the season they last won the Champions League, where Bravo started in the league and Ter Stegen started in the Champions League, it couldn't last.
No.
It cannot last.
But at least in that situation, the goalkeepers know when they're going to play and when they're not. I don't think that's a particularly good way of doing it.
I think that's talked about in that way. I don't think it's ever the case in reality, because it's not like that goalkeeper has blinkers to stop it looking at,
Sure.
Oh, by the
they
way,
did win the Champions League.
By the way, Bravo. We only play on weekends now. What midweek? No. Don't worry. Only Saturday or Sunday, really. Sometimes
we're in the
Friday.
Champions League final. That's on the weekend. Yeah.
Because it worked for the.
I didn't know we're in this competition.
Doesn't mean it worked for the players.
Worked for Mourinho's Real Madrid.
For a bit.
Yeah, or did it? Don't think it did, actually.
I mean, it almost blew up in his face.
Ancelotti did it, didn't he? With Casillas in the Champions
Ancelotti,
League?
Yeah, and it almost blew up in his face, because Casillas made that error that nearly cost them the 2014 Champions League final.
Emphasis on the word almost, Andy. There you go. Get Ramsdale in the cups.
Enjoying you rearranging your clothes as you wear that expression that says, but I was right.
Yeah. It's actually a Nice shirt all the way down to my knees. Before we move on, quick mention for Kai Havertz. As I said to you, Vish, the other day, scoring for fun. You said you and I have a different idea of what fun is. I put the question to you again. He is scoring for fun, isn't he?
He scored a goal. Yeah. It was good. I mean, I think Jesus deserves all the credit for that goal, given the
come on.
No.
Roy Keane over
it. I mean, you can't not wish Havertz well, but I'm saying with that goal, I think a lot of credit should go to Jesus.
On finding a bloke who's 7 foot tall with a pass. Brilliant.
Yeah, well, hold on. He held off a defender.
He held off a defender
and gained control of the ball when the only touch on the ball he had was a deft little through ball to and a lovely little finish. And an important time for a goal, actually, because the commentators were cycling through the fact that Luton had come back, that it's going to be a real test of Arsenal, and they were about to really get into the weeds on the Rhea Ramsdale stuff, and then it was scores
and
a miracle.
It was done. Well, Manchester City travelled to Kenilworth Road this weekend. Surely chaos is the answer, Jim.
I hope so. I mean, that promises to be absolutely mad if they can put in a performance like this. And it seems mad to say it, doesn't it? But City have been shipping goals lately. Mm. So we'll see. I suspect this will be very different, though.
But that's why this win was so vital, wasn't it? Because in a week where City are going to Villa, you can't be dropping any points if you're Arsenal.
No, certainly not. But look, again, we said at the start of this gives Luton such a kind of confidence boost. It won't feel like that. Probably won't feel like that today even. Mm. But if you can go toe-to-toe with Arsenal, who are the league leaders, lest we forget, you've got a chance, haven't you? So there we are. Elsewhere in the Premier League last night, Wolverhampton Wanderers beat Burnley 1-0. That man, Hwang Hee-chan, scored again. He's having a great season. Mm. He's scoring goals for fun, Vish, would you agree?
Or
you
I would agree.
Or do you want to pour cold piss
that
on that one as well?
No, it's not my piss, water.
You're going to say, though, he has having a great season so far.
Yeah, he has, yeah. We saw him, actually, Jim and I watched him on the weekend, and Wolves didn't actually do all that much against Arsenal, in part because they had a couple of key absentees in the middle of the park, but the ball seems to stick to his feet more than anyone, and he's quite underrated built as well.
Well, indeed. And so in his native South Korea, he is nicknamed the Bull, Hwangzo, which means bull.
That's jokes.
Which is great, isn't it? Yeah. It works so well, and he is. He's...
It even sounds like a nickname you'd have here, Hwangzo.
Yeah. we can all get behind it, especially Wolves fans. I'd imagine they will do.
I mean, their front three is impressive.
It is.
Cunha and Sarabia.
We've talked about
teams' problems.
Well, it's great that they've got a few more goals in them now, and Hwang is definitely chipping in,
because that's been their problem for ages, isn't it?
Exactly.
And the fact that Hwang is scoring goals is like taking the pressure off Cunha, because Cunha is a player who should really be setting the attacking agenda of that team. He's got the ability to do that. He's got the mentality where he wants to be the star of the team. But the whole problem with him since he's arrived there is he just hasn't been able to put the ball in the back of the net. But that is far less of an issue if Wang's doing that anyway.
Yeah.
So, and Wolves move up to 12th with that win, 18
and
points.
How high would they be?
That's 8 more. Yeah, indeed, 8 more than they've had this year. I think it was nice for Gary O'Neill for them to win, keep a clean sheet, none of the bollocks. Job done. Yeah. 3 points.
It was quite a fascinating atmosphere this game, though, because both teams were really clumsy playing the ball out from the back, which is how
the goal was scored.
How the goal was scored, but also how Wolves almost conceded before had Dan Bentley not saved from Rodriguez and Brownhill.
Wonderful double save.
Yeah, but like both sets of fans were furious with their own team for playing out of the back and were cheering when they were going long. But it was a really interesting contrast on what the manager and the team are trying to achieve and what the fans, because obviously both teams were struggling to a point, but only more so than Wolves.
You think a big part of that is like if you're a team in the bottom half of the league playing Burnley at the moment, there's a certain sort of inescapable tension. It's because we can't not win this.
Yeah.
We absolutely can't not win this. Yeah. You definitely felt that with Wolves in the last 20 minutes or so, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, they say with football tactics and formations, they go in sort of fads and in secular and all that kind of stuff. Mm. I just wish like the long ball suddenly became the cheat code, because we're ready for it in this country. We go, ha ha!
Big man and a little man at the top.
We can fall back to the old ways. We're there, baby.
Absolutely. Yeah. Two out and out wingers.
Yeah, I think. Oh, now you're talking, Jim. That game was the first glimpse we had of Amazon's new feature that counts down the number of subs each team has used.
They were so proud of it, weren't
Broadcasters
they?
Will try and do anything to kind of go, oh, well, we're doing this.
It's like, I'm going to age us horribly here, but do you remember when widgets were a thing in like beer cans? Like there was huge, huge advertising campaigns about how.
What did it do?
I think it was meant to keep it like bubbly. I think
it was just a little. It's always in cans of Guinness.
I think it might have been Guinness. Yeah,
right.
It's just it effectively did nothing. I think, and this reminded me of that.
Oh, they're
just
like going the Robbie Fowler strip over the nose.
No, that actually does something, doesn't
it? Does it?
Yeah, yeah. It opens your airwaves.
Really?
Yeah.
I always thought it was psychosomatic.
Well, you think he was like Nelly, he was wearing it for someone in prison. But the thing about the sub tabs on the Amazon stuff, it's absolute bollocks because you need to make those subs. You get three opportunities to make all those subs, yeah? And I can't remember which one of the four teams yesterday didn't do that. So it still had the tabs up top. So if you watched it, you'd be like, oh, they've got two more subs left, but they couldn't make them.
Yeah, of course.
So it was like, well, so now you need to explain it for that. You need another set of tabs now.
Yeah, in France, it sort of has it in lines as session 1, 2, 3.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So that's too long.
That's like French shirts, adverts everywhere.
Yeah.
Clutter.
I'm into that, though. I like it. Mm. All right, let's have a quick break.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Another corner. Not too worried about these corners. I mean, it might come back to bite me here, but I think Tottenham have got the dominance in the air there, you know, so I'm not sure anyone can get ahead on the first ball for Liverpool apart from that.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Andy, before we talk about some managerial happenings in the Premier League. We mentioned, of course, Ramsgate on Friday's show, the lowest ranked team in the FA Cup, a lot of romance and so on. Well, their run came to an end on Monday, of course, as they were beaten by AFC Wimbledon 5-0. Were you there punching the air with every goal that went in?
I was not, but as it had the full proper TV setup from ITV with 16 cameras in the stadium, the main broadcast camera was actually on the other side of the stadium, which was a little bit dizzying. But it did allow me to see who was sitting in my seats, as I couldn't make the game.
Right, seats, plural.
Yeah, so, interesting.
Feet on them as well.
Likes to put his feet up. Likes to put his bag on there. Well, Andy, it's a shame because you're a good argument for keeping the blackout on a Saturday, because as the game was televised, you didn't bother going.
Yeah, exactly.
Want to see all
exactly.
those angles.
That's
well,
the reason.
Shame on you for condemning Ramsgate. But there we are. Great run for them, though. And let's hope AFC Wimbledon get thrashed by a bigger side in the next round. Right. Heckey's out. Wilder's in. Sheffield
Good.
United. Sheffield United. 24 hours after it was rumoured on Twitter, Sheffield United announced
that they had sacked manager Paul Heckingbottom. But they didn't really announce it because, of course, Prince Abdullah announced the news that he was going to get Chris Wilder in live on TalkSport. That was before the club's official announcement.
Yeah. He also talked about how he likes to keep a good relationship with all of his former employees in the same interview. So, like, guess what, Paul?
Don't go anywhere. He called Chris Wilder the best guy on planet Earth to take over the club. And Chris Wilder did say that they'd sort of smooched and made up after the way he was sacked last time. He may have not used the word smooch, though. But Wilder left Sheffield United in March 2021, having taken just 14 points from 28 games that season. It's an interesting one. I mean, the Prince is very, very optimistic. He says Chris is very optimistic as well. He can save our season. It does give everybody a lift there, Andy. You know, Wilder's, he's got pedigree, of course, at Sheffield United. That amazing season when he first brought them up. They weren't going anywhere under Heckingbottom, sadly, because Paul Heckingbottom was putting a hell of a shift for Sheffield United. We can't forget.
Yeah, he has, exactly. Especially with the sort of restraints that they've had, mainly financial. So, I think this is just an emotional choice, really, and a financial choice, again, because he's going to be cheap. Because if you look at Wilder's career overall, it's really interesting. He's succeeded at loads of different levels, mm-hmm. unlike really many other coaches that I can think of. Having said that, you know how each great coach has maybe a 10-year lifespan at their absolute peak? You have to wonder, is Wilder past that? Because you look at Middlesbrough, mm-hmm. you look at Watford, where they could barely buy a goal when they had João Pedro and Ismail Assar in the team. Mm. You know, it doesn't talk a lot of his recent pedigree, does it?
You're right. I mean, I think that people are going to look at that season in the Premier League when they're impressed, forgetting then what happened in the second season.
And everything that's happened since.
Yeah,
and this is a much tougher challenge than that as well.
Yeah, you would say so. I do think, for some Sheffield United fans, they may be thinking, we've tried this and it didn't quite work. But then others will say, well, hang on a minute. He did actually produce some good performances and results, as I say, in the Premier. He still had that season. I mean, it would be a bit harsh to kind of say about Claudio Ranieri, yeah, but was he a good Leicester City manager because he got sacked the second season? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to be careful.
Yeah, but would you have him back? That's the question, isn't it? Mm. That's the only relevant question.
Not at Fulham, Andy.
But I suppose what ended up happening with Heckingbottom, which really, you know, came to a head on the weekend against Burnley, mm-hmm. was it kind of felt like for the last month he's been looking over his shoulder.
Yeah.
And everything that he's tried to do has almost been held back by the fact that he, you know, within the constraints he had to work through, like losing NDI and Sander Berger at the start of the season, he's just constantly been... It felt like he was able to turn a blind eye to that kind of stuff at the start because they needed to. They didn't quite get the good run, well, a run of good results when the fixtures were probably more skewed in their favour than they will be over the next month or so. Mm-hmm. And it just came to a point on the weekend where he was like, you know, they're not really trying. Ollie McBurnie's an idiot.
Yeah.
This is not a direct quote, by the way, but, you know, getting sent off in that way
just
is really,
an observation.
Really stupid. Yeah. So I do feel for him, but the change almost had to come because it was just all looking a bit.
Well, there's an expression in the States, of course, where you know they say you can't have two managers at a football club because if you do, then you have none.
Walk that out. Yeah. Go on then. Why?
Also, I think are they having Schalke and Napoli?
No, not now, Andy.
Come on then.
Go on, do that. Walk that out for me.
Because
who would be the second? Are there two managers? Because there's only one manager, isn't there?
Yeah, but Chris Wilder, like, he's always looking over his shoulder. You know,
it's not Chris Wilder, though, is it?
And
but it was a week ago.
It was, yeah.
That's about time someone called you on your bullshit.
It was, and then Chris Wilder, he had a bone in his mouth, and he went down to the river. Oh dear, Jim, you were going to say something.
I was going to say something, which was that earlier on in the season, we were all saying about Sheffield United that though they weren't necessarily getting the results, the performances were quite good, and they looked like actually they weren't far away from starting to find their feet and you know, maybe getting some better results. But then that completely fell away. So there is something to work with Wilder there. We've seen that they've got a bit of potential. We saw that from the start of the season. For whatever reason, that they've seen adrift of that now, but
he knows the club, Jim.
I mean, yeah, it does seem like a sort of break glass, do the most obvious thing possible.
It does,
it?
But I just, yeah, I I get it.
I do. Do you know what I mean? Well. Yeah. I think that sounded like criticism, but I.
Who else are you going to get?
Makes as much sense as anything else.
I think that's the line, really, isn't it?
I think that the whole sort of Sam Allardyce thing has flown, if you like, to Dubai specifically. That's probably where he is right now. The idea that, you know, there's sort of the old school sort of firefight. I mean, some people might say Chris Wilder's that. I don't think he is, actually. I think he's got a bit more about him, certainly tactically. Although that's no disrespect to
love to see an old school firefighter. Like they get Peter Reed or Dave Bassett or something.
Just goodness. Pile in, why not? Where's Kerbishley these days? I do understand. I think it's brave of him to take charge against Liverpool tonight. But, you know, bollocks, why not, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We joked about that on Monday, that the guy coming in and be like, you know what, let me just watch this one.
Yeah.
Let me pick up on Thursday. But, yeah, fair play to him.
But he'll be watching them. You know, Wilder won't be completely unfamiliar.
I mean, with all the... Yeah, like, just to riff on that point, and I suppose put an undercurrent of sadness onto that, like, it's not... Prince Abdullah didn't just call Chris Wilder on Monday and be like, by the way, we haven't spoken in ages. Yeah. Would you fancy it? Those conversations have been going on for a long time. Mm-hmm. But it also, this appointment, by the way, means that a quarter of the Premier League managers currently have previously managed Watford.
That's a lovely one.
That's great.
Wilder, Rob Edwards, Silva, Dyche, and Roy Hodgson.
There you go. Chris Wilder will be taking charge against Liverpool tonight. Speaking of Liverpool, former Liverpool man Luis Suarez is reportedly finalising a transfer to Inter Miami.
That's why you're the best in the business.
Thank you, brother. Much like Suarez.
Indeed. Well, that said, have you seen the interview he did on leaving Gremio? He's talking about how he needs to like take three different pills every night just
quite
so
sad.
He like to ease the pain. Like,
can't
he can
play
barely
football
walk
with his son.
When he wakes up, can't play football with his son. Reckons he won't be able to play football with his mates in 5 years. Like, Luis, I know you love the game. I know that this is probably going to be a really fun time at Inter Miami, but just maybe don't.
I don't know. I think Messi might need a rocket put at him and he's the man to do it.
He did do that all the time, didn't he? It was brilliant.
What was that game when they had, he was played behind closed doors, and we mentioned it before on the Ramble, but you could hear the player shouting, and obviously there was a translation, and he was just like at Messi the whole time. It was class.
Who do you think you are?
Yeah. Don't shout for it if you don't want it, sort of thing. You know, I think it was the one. You know, it was super.
Look, mate, three touches is all you need.
Yeah, exactly. What have you ever won? Great stuff. Tonight, it's a big one. Manchester United versus Chelsea. I think that's still a big one. Several reporters were banned from Manchester United's pre-press conference over what Manchester United claimed was the reporters' failure to contact the club for comment before publication.
Nothing conveys institutional control and strength better, does it?
Yes.
Than banning a load of journalists.
Mm-hmm. How can Old Trafford and those at Old Trafford embarrass themselves a little bit more? Because, I mean, we've had the raw chicken incident. Yeah. We've had with obviously the roof. The results and performances, and now this.
A lot of those in the last few days.
Yeah,
weirdly,
is this sort of a little bit of short term pain for longer term gain in terms of all this kind of quite circus like stuff?
Though? How so?
Because I wonder if they're thinking, well, we can't find the leaker or leakers, so let's cut off the people they're leaking to.
No, that's. It's funny. I've seen the.
I think if Baldrick was in charge of their comms, then maybe.
But the depressing thing is a lot of the conversation online that I've seen from like Manchester United like vloggers and stuff like that has been along those lines, and they've kind of, you know, almost dug up the spirit of Sir Alex Ferguson and his approach to journalists, which we should all remember was plainly out of arrogance. It was done in a way of like, who are you to speak to me like that?
Yep.
You know, that long-term ban with of the BBC because of that thing. And it went on for ages until he eventually...
And that wasn't becoming of Ferguson and all
not at all. But I feel like he eventually like went back on it because he forgot about it. He just forgot why he was annoyed with them.
Mm. Do you think the same thing could happen with Ten Hag and Jadon Sancho?
That would be quite funny. He unfollowed him on Instagram or something. Mm. But that essentially was done out of arrogance. This is done out of paranoia, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's not actually... Like, everyone leaks because, you know, I think leaks is a very, like, overly sexy way of talking about it.
Ooh.
almost with a bit of an espionage world in there. It's just people having conversations, yeah? Having conversations with one person who has a conversation with someone else.
Well, that is one way of framing it. Another way of framing it is it's a bunch of underachieving players who've let down successive coaches, blaming it on everyone but themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I'm purely talking about this move that the United have done there.
Sure, yeah.
And I think when they say that you should have come to the club for a comment on this, I think there is a point to that in terms of they would refute it, but it's a little bit disingenuous of Ten Hag and the media team at Old Trafford to be like, oh, you know, we would have clarified some things for you. All those conversations that you're reading in the papers are probably all true, and we'll get onto that later as to why they're ridiculous, but they're probably all true. And there's no way in hell that Ten Hag or whoever happens to be the media guy on the team WhatsApp group is across any of that, because they're not conversations that are being had in a public forum within Manchester United or whatever. They're just having them elsewhere. The ridiculousness of it is they're all quite pathetic things to be complaining about, but they are being complained about.
See, I think that they should take a sort of a Colleen Rooney approach to this. You remember when you know, she...
Do we remember?
when she... didn't she block everybody? Or
she did, yeah.
Apart from Rebecca
Vardy.
Right, so you just invite... just. One by one, the journalists of the press conference go, oh, no, we really value you. You're here on your own. Oh, that's good. And then you smoke them out, Andy.
Yeah, that would take strategy. It doesn't feel that United have strategy at any level at the moment. I mean, I've seen them twice in the flesh in the last week, and chaotic is the word.
A bit Luton Town.
They're not even chaotic good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they were...
chaotic finished club.
But yeah, what really struck me of all the different faces at Manchester United that I saw in the last week...
You were at the Galatasaray, I imagine.
Yeah, and the Newcastle one at the weekend. Ten Hag, when he spoke after the game, and there were like a lot of... And we're talking about this relationship and this deteriorating relationship between United and journalists. A lot of United following journalists, as you know, Manchester United enthusiasts, were like genuinely very, very annoyed about the way that United had played in that game at Newcastle. And they were very, very poor, as been discussed on here already. And lucky not to get thrashed by a team that has, you know, got 11 fit players at the moment, or 10 by the end, because obviously Nick Pope got injured. And Ten Hag came out and faced these questions, and he was asked about Rashford specifically, who obviously had a very, very below par game and is in a trough at the moment. And he said, it'll be fine. It's like, that can't be the answer, can it? To just sit there and go, it'll be fine.
I just, yeah.
He's the dog in the pork pie hat at the moment.
Do you think
which is awful.
I like that image. Do you think he'll be there come the summer?
I think that sacking him won't really solve anything. But, and not all of it's his fault. I said on the continent at the start of the season, well, actually, two games in after they lost at home to Galatasaray, that they shouldn't sack him, but if they don't get through the Champions League group, that will leave them in a position where they have to sack him. Yeah, and really? I think that's what will happen. He'll get binned before Christmas.
I think he'll get a clean slate when the sort of semi-takeover happens, personally.
Right, okay.
This idea of new faces taking over the football side, they're surely going to give him a chance to work in an environment that functions slightly better.
The Wiley Report story, of course, which we're talking about there, is that he's lost the confidence of some players over his tactics and signings. When you start hearing he's lost the dressing room and all the rest of it, that usually goes one way. Not always,
but it
often does.
Can I just say, on this you know, strange situation where they've banned certain journalists, it's obviously... I think completely reasonable when you look at their reasons for it, that they want to have their own opportunity to comment and to have their right of reply almost in advance and the chance to sort of add some further context, et cetera, et cetera. Firstly, it's kind of, you know, even if that was the case, it's not going to stop these stories coming out because they're coming from somewhere because of the dysfunction at the club. But like, banning the Manchester Evening News in particular is massive. Yeah, like Manchester is obviously a huge global city in a lot of ways, but the areas... both clubs there are, you know, see themselves as community clubs, like very, very much so. The local identity is a really, really strong part of what makes them what they are. And banning the Manchester Evening News seems like something that's just going to, I don't know.
Alienating the major local news outlet never ends well.
Yeah, especially
you're right.
if the Liverpool Echo come in and take the seat. That would be interesting.
That would be so good.
It would be brilliant.
Oh, we've got some questions.
Take us through the defeat. But they are playing Chelsea tonight. Huge game for both sides, of course. Chelsea have had their captains, if you like, sent off in their last two games. Reece James against Newcastle, then Colin Gallagher against Brighton. So who's going to get the armband? I'd give it to a sub, Andy.
Well, yeah, just to be on the safe side.
Maybe.
When was the last time?
Give it to a Manchester United player.
Just slip it on subtly.
When was the last time that Chelsea came into a match like this and you thought, oh yeah, they're on far more of an even keel?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Well, but what do you think about tonight's game? I mean, because Chelsea, at the moment, a big win, and it's always a big win at Old Trafford. Let's not be too silly about this. This would be perfect for them to suddenly go, right, here we go, guys. You know, that's a bit more like it, and so on.
It would be. I think Chelsea fans have been really patient this season. Mm-hmm. I think, given everything that's happened over the last year, and particularly the policy under Todd Boehly and the transfer market,
and having only won 5 out of 14 league games this season,
yes,
which is enough for 10th position, but still, it's Chelsea.
What I would say is, if they were to go to Old Trafford and win, especially after the manner in which they beat Brighton, with Conor Gallagher going off, I think for the first time, I would genuinely think, okay, maybe there's some sort of progress here.
Yeah.
Rather than Chelsea fans looking at it and wanting to see some progress, I think, and you know, you can talk about the XG and how they should have got better results out of the game. So I thought, well, they haven't, as you say. They've only won those 5 games.
At some point, it needs to translate into victories.
Yes, it does. It would feel like a really good step in the right direction if they went and won at Old Trafford. Not because Man United are invincible there or anything like that, but just because it's a big game and they need to follow up that Brighton game.
And it gets the fans going as well if you win at Old Trafford.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But, I mean, on the Brighton game, you know, the fact they were down to 10 men and Brighton was kind of, you know, buzzing around the box and all the rest of it towards the end of the game, you know, they held on and it was ultimately a good win for them.
Really good. Really good. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of... Like we've seen lots of promising moments from Chelsea this season.
Yeah.
But that felt like a really key point in the season, if they can build on it.
Yeah, if they can build on it. Well, it'd be an interesting one. Vish, you were concerned about this evening's game from a Manchester United point of view?
Yeah, a little bit. There's it has a bit of the vibes of, do you remember the opening game of the season when Chelsea had the transfer ban?
Yes.
They came to Old Trafford and didn't really know what to expect from them. Has a feeling of that, although, as you said before, when you put the question to Andy, Chelsea arrived being like, God, look at the state of this lot.
Yeah.
Which has got to be quite a unique thing for them. Mm-hmm. Even with two captains sent off in the last like 2 weeks, they should really fancy it. I think they just need to hold firm in the middle and I think they will be all right. Mm. And the fact that it's Old Trafford, frustrate for half an hour, let the crowd do the rest of the work.
Yeah.
I think the crowd at Old Trafford have been very patient recently. Mm-hmm. And have kind of saved their anger for the end of games or the end of halves. I think, given what's happened in the last week, given all the conversations that have happened at the last week off the field, this could be quite a... one of those bookmark days of like, this is when the end began. Mm. Yeah.
Jim, is the Premier League getting more patient? That word has been used twice now with regards to fans. We finally got our first sacking, managerial sacking of the season. I say it as if we wanted it. That's not the case. Do you think we're in a better place?
Yeah. Since a certain manager introduced the phrase, trust the process, I think the whole league has been better, more mature and more patient for it. And it's good for you to, you know, acknowledge that and give the credit where it's due. Yeah.
Gentlemen, I want to turn our attention to Dutch football for a moment. Erik ten Hag's old club, FC Twente in particular. And Steve McLaren's, they revealed that they made more money last season from selling beer than selling players.
Now that seems mad, doesn't it? Until you see the sort of culture they have there, sort of become a competition about how much beer one individual fan can carry. There was a picture that went viral a few years ago. One guy had 64 pints.
What?
Like stacked up on cardboard tray, so he's obviously lifting from the bottom, trying as best he can to not spill the top one. 64
pints.
Yeah.
All
how
stacked.
Many? How many made it back to the seats?
All of them. I think all of them.
All of them.
It's become no like a way. Point of pride among them all. Like it's a, essentially a competition. It's amazing.
Because there's a famous Schalke fan who carries 12 pints of beer on his head.
Small fry.
But yeah, that's nothing in comparison.
It must be with a big group of people, right? I think they're stocking up on their drinks for the entire game.
Oh,
they are trusted.
You don't want to queue twice, do you?
Well, no, absolutely
not. That's a tough round, isn't it? It's always nice when you walk in and everyone's got a drink. You're like, oh, I'll just get myself one, yeah.
So the bar staff, I hope they're on extra money here. Because if this is happening regularly...
But it's always a kick in the gut when you walk in and all 63 of your mates...
Yeah, annoying, annoying.
Yeah, it's very annoying. Well, yeah, I mean, so the stadium is sponsored by Grolsch, fittingly. But yes, that picture of that fan, Jim, did the rounds on social media. And the fan question, I love this. I love it. The fan said he received hundreds and hundreds of followers on Instagram as a result. That's our man.
All blokes.
Yeah, oh yeah.
All blokes.
It's super.
Here he is.
His output must be worth it. And what's a Grolsch? And what does he post, Jim? Out of interest.
Yeah, it's mostly just beer stuff. Yeah,
just that photo every now and again. I just love it. I need more of this man in my life. Yeah. How can I access it? Superb. Yeah, so get yourself over to FC20 if you like Dutch football and you like the Grolsch. There we are. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Patreon subscribers, don't go anywhere. Keep listening for Ramble Uncut. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, do sign up to get Ramble Uncut every single Wednesday. Head over to patreon.com/footballramble. Of course, follow us on Twitter, TikTok, YouTube and Instagram at Football Ramble. And don't forget to subscribe on your podcast app. Thank you, Andy Brassel.
Thank you, but I'll carry on talking to you in 30 seconds.
Of course you will. Thank you, Vatushin Hantaraja.
I'm going to refuse to talk to you in 30 seconds.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
I'll talk to you, mate.
Thanks, bruv. And thank you, everybody. See you soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
The Championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real Championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.